You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 10th of October, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Martin Higginson, CEO of Emotion Group. IMMO is ticker there. And Martin talks about their deal with major leisure operator Aspro Parks for a potential rollout of their VR installations. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, money analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the rise in gold ETFs popularity, Sirius Minerals and Bushveld Minerals. Plus, I also have two very important lists for you. The top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top 5 most liked RNSs. And I always say this, check them out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Top 10 lists right there. The most followed companies are basically companies people are researching and maybe even investing in. So it's a measure of money to a certain extent. And also, if you do receive an RNS from Vox, from our app, free to download at your app store, and the notifications as well are free. If you get that, you like the content of the RNS, hit that thumbs up button, and it could feature on the podcast right here and on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Higginson, Chief Executive Officer of Emotion Group. IMMO is ticker. Martin, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, good morning, Justin.
Now, you've had some good news out. Emotion Group signs a deal with Aspro Parks for Blue Planet Aquarium, Cheshire. It's, I sort of sent this on social media, got shared quite a lot. There's a lot of people liking this. And I thought it's a good point right now. If someone's listening right now, Martin, and they saw that you are have one of the most liked RNSs on Vox and you are one of the most followed companies right now today, but they don't know the story, just give them a summary as to what Emotion's about, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, Emotion is an immersive sort of education and entertainment company, you know, really focused in on sort of VR. So we combine motion platforms and VR experiences, whether that be live action or CGI, and we actually deliver those into a number of sectors. So we've broken our business down into 4 sectors. So we have aquariums, then we have zoos, science centres and museums, and then the entertainment sector. And we produce bespoke or tailored solutions for each one of those sectors. So in the aquariums, we've got things like swimming with humpback whales, swimming with sharks. We've got an ecological sort of mission statement, CGI piece. In the zoo area, we're now working on some new initiatives. So we've got Congo River Ride. Then we're working on a new Jurassic one. In the science area, we've got Delta Zero. Plus, we've also got the new Apollo 11 mission to the moon. And then obviously in the entertainment sector, you've got all of the roller coaster rides. And you've recently seen the launch of things like Blackpool, which has had the sort of tailored sort of city experience. So we've taken a view of Blackpool as a city, and then we've done a roller coaster around it. And then we're doing more of those. So we're doing one for London. We've just agreed one for Birmingham, so that's going to go into Star City. So Star City has just recently been refurbished, and then we're putting a new tailored Tower Coaster ride. So Tower Coaster Birmingham is going to Star City, one of our best performing sites, and then we've got one for London, then we'll do them for other iconic cities around the world. So, you know, basically a lot happening, all very much in that sort of, you know, providing big footfall destinations with solid ancillary revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very busy. And now, you know, on top of that, you've just done a deal with Aspro Parks. Explain this deal and tell us who Aspro are, if you could, Martin.
Yeah, Aspro are a large operator, sort of similar size to Merlin. They've got 80 centres around Europe. A lot of aquariums, a lot of leisure centres and entertainment centres. We've got this first one, a trial in Cheshire, in the Blue Planet in Cheshire. So, you know, significant milestone for us. And, you know, we're not worried about this trial. Every aquarium that we've been in has been a roaring success. You know, we recently installed into the London Aquarium. That's been an amazing success. You know, we have no concerns about this at all. Obviously, right from their point of view, they've never worked with us, so they want to make sure that we're a good company to work with. But, you know, I think this will just be, you know, stage one of what we hope will be a long and very successful and profitable relationship.
Yeah, because I did see someone say, well, it's only a trial. But, I mean, like I said, you were quite confident of that, are you? The trial will play it well.
Yeah, look, you know, Merlin was a trial. Lots of things have been trials. You know, we encourage people to trial things. You know, we're very, very confident in our product. So we have no problem in anybody entering a trial. It's the right thing for them to do. You know, nobody's going to sign up to all, you know, all of their centres, you know, off the bat. They don't particularly know us. They can see other things that we've done. They can see the quality of our product, but they want to prove it works in their environment. It will work. That I'm, you know, 100% certain, and I'm, you know, confident that we will be rolling these things out into other sort of Aspro operated sites in the UK and then further afield in the coming months.
Yeah, yeah, and just tagged on the end then, someone pointed out this probably could have been an R&S on its own, but you've also done deals in Paris and America as well.
Yeah, so we signed another Sea Life Centre. So Sea Life Paris, which is a, you know, another iconic sort of location, and you know there are a lot of sea lifes in the Merlin estate, so we're now just going through those. And obviously on the back of and again similar to the sort of Aspro, they trialed it in sort of Germany, then they trialed it in Australia and in Sydney and Melbourne, and then on the back of that we've then done London, and then on the back of the success of that we've now done Paris. Yeah. So you can see how this sort of unfurls. And then, you know, more in the US, you know, one there in Washington State. And there's lots more to come in the US. You know, we're our team there is very, very active. And, you know, we've also had the European team. We've strengthened that team. And we're looking forward to some more sort of signings, you know, in the coming weeks in Europe as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how many headsets have you up to, or how many have you officially said you're up to as yet?
Well, we are sort of 250, and this sort of adds, you know, with everything that we've done over the last few weeks, there's sort of another sort of 50, so we're sort of, you know, knocking on the sort of 300 mark now. But, you know, we've got a lot more in the pipeline, so, you know, we're confident about, you know, hitting that EBITDA break-even in quarter one, as we've always said, you know, and we're confident on the rollout in sort of 2020. And, you know, what's also really good is now we're the more quality sites we get and the more qualitative earnings that we get obviously reduces, you know, sort of our sort of break-even in terms of headset numbers, and it sort of effectively all of that, the better quality, the higher the profit is from these sites.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at, just going further out, I mean, obviously that next sort of milestone is that break even you're hoping to achieve in Q1 next year. But further out then, Martin, what are you hoping to achieve there? What's the ambition for Emotion?
Yeah, look, I think you've got to look at this in sort of stages. You know, we're very focused on hitting that EBITDA break even. That is a significant milestone for the company. We're you know, focused on driving additional headsets, getting to that 1,000 headsets. we see that being driven through a combination of not only sort of continued acceleration in the aquarium sector. We are going to launch into the zoo sector, so we're going to open that market, and we're just in talks now with a number of zoos. So, you know, the zoo sector is much bigger than the aquarium sector. Then we've got the science and museum centres. So again, we've got the right product for those, and we're talking to a number of those partners. And then we'll be with the entertainment sector. And then as you stand back, you know, we're also developing things for sort of, you know, cinemas and looking at how we can introduce a sort of VR cinema. Lots of people will have been to 4D cinemas, and we think that the VR cinema is the next iteration. So we're working very hard on, you know, what we do in that sort of area. You know, and obviously 4D cinemas are, you know, sort of 24 to 96 seats. If we can produce a you know, solid, well-priced VR cinema that's got all of this thing on, then I think there's a big market there. And then I think if you look at the bigger aspect, you know, what we're looking at is, you know, zoos and aquariums over the next sort of 5 to 10 years are going to change. They're going to have to rely much, much more on things like VR for some of the more endangered species. This is how you're going to be able to sort of experience and see these animals. So I think we can work in conjunction with these partners and really go on a sort of, you know, an evolution where we start producing more and more products that allow their customers and their public to actually see these endangered animals. Congo River Ride is a good example where we're doing all of the endangered species of the Congo. You know, our Jurassic River Ride will be, you know, people will be able to see dinosaurs, you know, as actually, you know, they lived millions of years ago, and in the true perspective. So I think it's, you know, we're really working hard with our partners to deliver something that is right for them, for their customers, and enhances their position in the market.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense, doesn't it, as well, with like zoos, when, you know, some people often question zoos and why they exist. And I suppose, you know, sometimes why should an animal be in a zoo if it's flourishing outside a zoo? So there is that opportunity, isn't it, to be, you know, sort of environmentally friendly, you know, go and see these animals in a VR type of way, you know?
Yeah, look, the quality will get better and better. So, you know, in the years to come, you're not going to be able to talk the difference between, you know, real and VR. The lines will blur. We were always confident of this when we started the business. This was always our sort of mission and our mantra. So, you know, we can see a future, and as I said, whether it's 3, 4, 5, or 10 years time, that you're going to be able to look at, you know, endangered species, species that may be extinct. You're going to be able to look at those as if they're in real life. And as technology improves, and, you know, you maybe go from sort of virtual reality to augmented reality to mixed reality, then we will follow those sort of technology sort of improvements. We, you know, we pride ourselves on being technology agnostic. This is about, you know, producing the right thing for our partners and allowing them to give their customers an enhanced experience and deliver bigger and better ancillary revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Martin, one final thing to do. If someone's listening to this, likes the progress you're making, because you're very busy at the moment, and it'll continue to be so, I think, but they're not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, as I've said before, we're in the right sector, but we are technology agnostic. So we're very much about focusing in on the partner. We're very much about driving ancillary revenue. If you then look about the other sectors that we're in edutainment, zoos, aquariums, science centres, we can deliver things for consumers that they just will not be able to see in the real world. Whether that be an endangered species, whether it be dinosaurs, whether it be a mission to the moon, these are things that you're going to be able to experience on motion platforms up close and personal. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the combination of that, the combination of the sector that we're in terms of VR, you know, it's definitely not a fad. It's here to stay. And whether it's VR, mixed reality, augmented reality, doesn't really matter. What we're doing is we're holding our partners' hands and we're actually helping them deliver more and more revenue. And it's ultimately all about sort of average revenue per user. So I think we're well positioned, if not uniquely positioned, in this sector. And the more partners that we sign up, we're looking at long-term partners. So it's all about building that solid annuity revenue. And I'm a big fan of annuity businesses. You know, we've got a lot of skin in the game in this business, and I think the more we can build annuity revenues, and you know, the more that will be reflected in our share price in the coming months and years.
Marvelous stuff, Martin. Good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John?
Yes, good, thank you.
A funny sound in my ear then. I realise I normally have one headphone off and it was on the wrong ear this time. So what's going on here? So anyway, but you're there. That's good, John. You sound a bit different for a second there. But there's a lot of things going on. The market's very hard at the moment, John, and some of the things not helping. And I see it almost like a red flag when companies fail to get funding away, especially pre-revenue companies, or they're struggling a lot. That is a red flag, isn't it, in the market? And we've had some big ones, you know, and in the resource sector, Sirius is an excellent example where some private investors, lots of them, have got burned. I've read stories about this guy who put like 35 grand of his life saving into it. He lived close to the site there, and he thought he was going to be good to employ people, good for his pension, and he lost a lot, pretty much. And it's a sad thing, isn't it? But I understand the CEO has been shouting his mouth off a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, there have been some criticisms in the Times about bulletin boards and those sorts of things, which personally I think is a bit unwarranted. I mean, bulletin boards and other media talking about stocks are a feature of the market these days. There is good information on those bulletin boards, and there sometimes is not. I don't read them myself because it would take time away from the real analysis that we do. And I think investors have to, you know, if they read those things, need to go in with their eyes very wide open that they are going to get information from people who are talking their own book to a large degree. Mm-hmm. The situation at Sirius is, it's very unfortunate, the laying off of 300 people. But this was a project that didn't appear to have all the finance in place before they started. And it's a bit like a pack of cars or dominoes. You know, when one part of the financing jigsaw falls over, then so do some of the other parts. And sadly, when they couldn't get their $500 million bond issue away, mm-hmm. and there are never any guarantees in these things. I mean, you might get bankers saying, oh, yes, we'll get it done for you. But actually, there aren't any guarantees. And so there was a $400 million convertible that was contingent on the $500 million being raised in the bond market. So that they've had to, I believe they're having to hand the money back there to RCF. And the project is further away from being fully financed than it was before. And it was, as far as we can see from the numbers, it wasn't even fully financed with the $400 and the $500 million cash injections from the convertible and the bond. So I do wonder what the full management plan was. I'm not party to their inner thinking. And we've also seen the capital cost of this project go from around $3 billion to $4 billion. So one would have hoped that the management would have come up with a plan to perhaps reduce the capital cost of the project, but we haven't seen news on that yet.
Yeah, do you know what? I did a video a while back talking about five avoidable risks. And number one was trying to pre-guess important news before it came out. And this includes financial results, this includes drilling results, or like, especially with oil and gas, but anything that's significant to share price. And trouble is, a lot of people try and get in before the good news, expected good news lands, you know? And so that's why the share price rises towards the expectation, don't they? And then often, you find, even if it is good news, that's because if the news is out there, like this bond, for example, and you expect it to happen, right, that news isn't the line in the sand. You understand that's exactly the amount it's going to raise. So even if that landed, the share price probably would have come back anyway, because that's almost priced in, you know? And so it's always worth waiting, and that's the trouble. And another thing is, CEOs should never, ever, 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 and I've heard a couple of CEOs just look at bulletin boards. Like I said, all it is people who have shares, as rampers and trolls. Rampers and trolls is all they are on bulletin boards. Should never. The CEO's job is to run the business. That's all. And if it goes well, the share price will react positively. You know, it may be a lag, but it may be ahead of itself. But that's all they have to do. They shouldn't look at the opinions of shareholders or trolls who have sold the stock. It's completely not within their remit. It's not their job, you know. If they want to get someone looking at bulletin, if they want to get advice from shareholders, you know, they've got a website. Just say submit it through the website and we'll cover off these questions and release them via an RNSR or on the podcast, whatever. But they should not go on, you know, trawling bulletin boards and blaming bulletin boards. It's just ridiculous, you know?
I think just to balance things out a little bit.
No, don't, John, don't. No, we don't. No, we don't. We like it one-sided.
Offer a balanced view. For the poor, long-suffering shareholders in this company, it is always possible that a major mining company might come in and go, okay, this
Hang on, John, don't give people false hope, though, because I don't want people jumping back in who've lost a lot of money, doubling down on their loss. Do you know what? At the moment, you've got to say it's not going to happen, and you've got to price that in. So until that good news comes, don't jump back in hoping it'll come, because that was the problem last time. People hoping something would happen that didn't happen. And so, you know, like I said, it's one of these things. Are you an investor or are you a gambler or punter? Now, if you're a gambler or punter, you will invest in the hope that something positive will happen. If you're an investor, you wait for the news and then wait for the share price to react and calm down a bit. Then you start investing, realizing this potential value creation going forward. But I just think now, hoping you may be right, John. I'm not saying you're not right at all, because you know about the mining game, you know. But what I'm saying is gambling on that hope or having a punt on that hope is high risk, very high risk, you know.
Just to say, there is the potential for a major mining company to come in.
Do you know what's happening?
I've got no idea what equity investors would get back from that.
The one
good thing is, if a major comes in, then the money spent in the ground won't have been wasted, and there is always potential for somebody to say, yes, we quite like this plan. And we'll complete it, and we'll re-employ the people who were at site, which I'd love to see. But the equity investors may get something back, but I certainly wouldn't be running in and buying the shares right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. It's a very high-risk strategy. And as always, there's other games in town. You know, that's how I always say. People just get obsessed with certain shares, and they think that there's only one investment opportunity in town. There's not. There's lots of others that are probably better or less risky. Cool, that's serious. Anything else, John? What are you chatting about? What are you looking at, companies-wise?
Well, we've been talking in the office about gold and what's moving gold price. And of course, we are in a risky environment, and the stock market for small-cap stocks feels like it's between a rock and a hard place right now, certainly in the mining sector, if you forgive the pun. But we're noticing investors piling into gold ETFs.
I've got a gold ETF.
Yeah, September was an incredibly busy month. In fact, a record month for certain gold ETFs. And we see over the course of the last year, the aggregate ETF market has gone from about 62, 63 million ounces up to 81.5. And that is a big old increase in gold holdings within those ETFs. Mm-hmm. It's a big shame that money hasn't gone into gold, the underlying gold stocks. But some of the gold stocks have done really quite well. If you look at Anglo Asian, for example, good company operating in Azerbaijan. But there are others out there worth looking at. And so there is activity. And let's not forget, the reason why people are buying into these ETFs and investing in gold, and it's not just small punters, it's central banks, the Polish central bank, the Russian central bank, the Chinese central bank, and a whole bunch of others are all looking at the global environment saying, this is really risky out here. Mm-hmm. Germany's heading into recession. Italy's probably heading into recession. Even the UK might end up in recession with what's going on with the Brexit situation. China is certainly slowing down. And there is quite likely to be there could well be some banking failures within all this. So I don't see anything quite as large as the Lehman Brothers failure. But there's got to be some trouble out there. We know the US authorities would not want to allow another Lehman-type failure to happen. So we could expect to see some bailout situations. But I'm more worried about the European banks than anywhere else. And I'm not a banking specialist, but negative interest rates are not known to be good for banks and their balance sheets. And this is quite tough for them. So in this environment, I think gold is just going to carry on going up.
Yeah, I bought a gold ETF for that very reason. I mean, what I find very odd is that we know pretty much global growth is slowing down. I've been looking at a raft of figures. On my weekend video, I covered loads of figures from the top six biggest economies in the world, and everything's slowing down pretty much. Most are in contraction, especially in Europe, but even in America now, it's slowing down, which was like the one bright light on the global economy, growth in the globe there. They're slowing down as well, the manufacturing. And I think, you know, Britain will go into recession. Our services sector, 80%, it's dominant, and that's gone into contraction. So it's a bit worrying. And I just think gold, and people, yeah, exactly, where's the return coming from at the moment? It's like bonds, there's no return on bonds. So I think high dividend paying stocks and gold, and people will go for the ETF because it's a spread across many producers. So if you do have issue with one, you know, if you invest in one producer, there can always be a specific problem with that company. You know, something can go wrong, and then the share price will take a knock. You spread that risk over 50 companies, it's less of a chance it'll go down. But still, it's quite leveraged the gold price, not as much as you would an individual company, but it's a safer way of playing the gold theme, you know?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And the more risky the world appears to everyone, the more money will get parked in gold. And if there is a dramatic failure of some sort of institution, then the gold price, like everything else, might dip lower. But it is likely to recover much faster than everything else. So that makes it an instrument worth holding. It is its own currency, so the dollar could collapse and gold would be fine. In fact, if the dollar collapsed, gold, we would expect gold to go up anyway, so that's not bad. I would personally expect the US economy to recover much faster than anything else, because it's in a good place. It's very well set. So although the Chinese and the Russians would love to destroy the dollar one way or another, I do see the US actually coming out of this trouble ahead of other economies.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, as I said, you know, for a long time, it seemed like the US economy is almost immune to these issues, but it's not now. There's the first cracks showing, and this is from the manufacturing and even consumer confidence. There are 70% consumer-driven economy, and even that is showing. You get, you know, people pulling investment. There's general worries about the economy, and so that's, you know, people sort of tighten their purse strings, and that takes, you know, obviously the result of that is people spend less, and so the economy slows down. So yeah, it's a bit worrying at the moment. It's all around, but. The thing is, what's worrying really about a slowdown is people don't know how big the slowdown will become. And even though some people won't be that big, when people are not factoring the sentiment, you know, when people start slowing down, everyone starts pulling investment, and that accelerates, you know, the bad sentiment, and that accelerates the slowdown. So it's a bit worrying in that respect. No one knows the depth of it. But anyway, you're going to say something about Bushveld when you're in the results. Is that right?
Yeah, well, look, for those brave value investors out there, the guys that like to try and take advantage of tough market conditions, Bushveld Minerals came out with their interim results a week ago. They're still producing, in fact, they produced pretty good profit numbers despite the pullback in vanadium prices. We pulled back our vanadium price forecast just a little bit from $50 a kilo to $45. Which I think everybody's kind of happy with. The company itself does long-term planning on a price that's not far off that, and I think they have the added benefit of the Bushveld Energy subsidiary, which is looking to build vanadium redox flow batteries, which are good for grid power storage, and I think that's going to be a growing business for them. So it's a business that's nicely underpinned by the earnings coming off the vanadium. It's expanding that by buying a business called Vanchem very cheaply, in my view, and so they will be investing in that and pushing the production ahead. And they can actually transport material up from their existing Vametco mine straight into Vanchem and ramp up the production there, which looks really good. So I think the market has missed the increase in production going forwards, because I think a lot of analysts, or certain analysts, are just focused on the Vametco production, whereas actually next year it's going to be Vametco and Vanchem, which will drive earnings growth. The margins on Vanchem will probably be a little bit less, but that's just because they're taking over a facility that they need to learn how to run properly. And I think this is good. I think this is going to be a dividend-paying stock going forwards. I think it's going to be a stock to watch, and something that does well in the London market for some years to come.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Look at the chart. They're at a nice support level. That 20 pence, it's been tested several times before on the way up and the way down. Obviously, barring any bad news, that is, fundamentals will always break technicals. But like I said, the chart looks very good. It's sort of bottomed out here and tested that level. So this may be, you know, a bottom. It may, you know, be a bit volatile around that, but it seems like a good base level, you know?
That's how it looks to me. It feels undervalued. It feels that it's been oversold on the back of the pullback in vanadium prices, which yeah, they got, though that vanadium price got overinflated last year. Lots of investors piled into that, and it did drive earnings really well. So Bushveld have enough cash to pay for the Vanchem acquisition, which they do at the end of this month. Then they can run that relatively easily. They can build the Mokopane mine to feed into that. But while they're building that mine, they can feed extra material from the Vametco mine. It all works very nicely together.
Marvellous. John, he dipped out a bit there, but I caught the last sentence. But marvellous stuff. Well, John, thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak to you next weekie.
Okay, look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rose Petroleum, ROSE, no move. At four, Expediated, down 4.3% at 22 pence. At two, Metro Bank, at £2.06, down just around about half of 1%. At two, Emotion Group, it was up earlier, but down a tad, just under 1%, down at 6.75 pence. And Brady Group up 20.8% at 7.25 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies. At five, Regal Petroleum, Ukraine update. At four, Cora Gold, proposed management and directorate change. John's stepping down there. I like John. John Forster, he's still going to be sort of head of geology, but he's stepping down from the CEO role. Nice guy there. Thor Mining, Molly Hill, mineral resource estimate enhanced. At two, Ncondezi Energy Holdings and Company. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Emotion Group, with Martin there, of course, in the podcast. Now it's the Emotion Science deal with Aspro Parks. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.